This is Werewolf the Podcast. Wine Country by Philip Resnick. To indulge in the full light of a summer afternoon, in dainties and wine, that would have done a Roman emperor proud, becomes the height of West Coast civility, combining love of consumerist insatiability with a glib ability to make conversation three tables long. Eating, sipping, burbling on about the beauty of the setting, the quality of the offerings, the joys of 21st century living. As the flotsam and jetsam of the world wash up on faraway shores.
High Level Games, the industry's first choice in taking your games to the next level. We are a podcast, blog, and new media network at highlevelgames.ca. We have blog posts about all of your favorite games going up 5 days a week, and a podcasting network with actual plays and shows that discuss role-playing games, with more rolling out all the time. We are on iTunes, Twitch, and YouTube. Find out more information at highlevelgames.ca, a site that certainly isn't controlled by a shadowy board of directors of otherworldly origin. That's highlevelgames.ca.
Please, help. They're coming. Welcome back to Werewolf the Podcast. This is your host, Josh Heath. Today we're going to be reviewing Dark Alliance Vancouver. Dark Alliance Vancouver was a regional source book for Werewolf the Apocalypse and Vampire the Masquerade. So it includes information on both Vampire and Werewolf, obviously, and we're going to be covering pretty much both material, going over a little bit more in depth than the Werewolf material, obviously, because of the focus of this podcast, but we're going to touch on some of the Vampire elements as well. This book was written by Nigel Finley and Jeff McMartin. It was published in 1993, and it definitely represents a step forward for some of the books that we've reviewed so far. This is probably the best presentation of First Nations people in a werewolf book to this point. And though there are still some concerning elements, there's still some frustrating elements in regard to that. Overall, this is probably, like I said, the best presentation of First Nations people in a werewolf book to date. And it's set in Vancouver, obviously, and the first chapter is setting information. It's information on the actual city of Vancouver, the area around it, a little bit of information on Canada in general, British Columbia, and it provides a fairly long, about 20 or 30 page overview of information you would need to run a chronicle or a one-shot or any sort of game within Vancouver. And it sets up the interesting dichotomy of a city that's relatively out in the middle of nowhere, which sets it obviously in werewolf territory fairly strongly, but also a large city in the Pacific Northwest that there are some vampires in, and those vampires are disconnected largely from the rest of vampiric society. So they're separated from both the Sabbat, the Camarilla, and they don't seem to have any sort of connection with the Nkanu or any of the other sorts of vampire groups. Now, if you're listening to this and you don't know who any of those vampire groups are anyway, sorry about that segue, but we're going to be talking about vampire in general ways throughout this. So you've got all this information on Vancouver and the area around it, which is useful. Particularly useful in 1993 when it was hard to get any of this information. You know, the internet wasn't very common. You could certainly go and get an atlas or go to the library and dig into this, but having this sort of detailed information on a city was super useful. So definitely something to check out if you're thinking, okay, I want to set this maybe historically in 1993, 1994, Vancouver. This is going to give you a good basis for that. Then chapter 2 is history. And this is the part where I think is potentially good is it does provide history information specifically on Native American or First Nations people, as would be more accurate for Canadian language usage. That being said, it does tend to focus more on the history elements of the vampires and the werewolves in the area. So yes, it does provide some human history details. I think it does so in a fairly decent way. It's not focused on actual history. It's focused on World of Darkness history. And you learn about Siegfried. And Siegfried is the vampire prince of Vancouver. He chose Vancouver because he could control it from the beginning. And he knew that he could guide this city to be the thing that he wanted it to be. And you get information on both the Native American Garou tribes and the settler colonialist tribes, or the Western European tribes of werewolves that are coming into this area and their interactions. And it's presented as if that wasn't particularly violent, but there are hints of violence in here. Obviously, if we look at real history, there was a lot of violence against Native peoples in this area. You could take that and build a deeper story. But it's interesting to note that eventually the vampires and the werewolves strike a deal, where instead of fighting against one another, they decide to set aside those differences and work relatively peacefully with one another between the city and the world around Vancouver. Siegfried has created this special enclave for vampires. Now, in this section, in this book in general, it gives the idea that there's only about 20 or 30 vampires in Vancouver, and yet there are 360 werewolves in Vancouver, in the greater area around Vancouver, and those 360 werewolves represent all the 13 different tribes of werewolves. That seems like there's more than enough werewolves to just take out the vampires, and I don't quite understand why they haven't, why they didn't, why they thought they needed to make this deal. That said, and I think we've mentioned this in previous podcasts, vampires are, in these early editions, presented as if they were stronger than werewolves. And by being stronger than werewolves, okay, you could look at a 20 to 360 ratio and say maybe they could hold their own, but statistics don't bear that out. And generally, werewolves tend to be much stronger, particularly because they run in packs. So that's an interesting setup. It shows, supposedly, that vampires are pretty powerful. Maybe they have more influence in these connections, and this is why this is happening. So the werewolves in this book are represented by a council of each of the 13 tribes that are working together. And each of the individuals in these 13 tribes are given stats. So the representatives themselves are given stats, and there are a few other NPCs provided as well. But it's interesting to note that the protectorate that controls the major cairn that's actually in the middle of Vancouver itself is not run by traditional werewolf standards. It's run using a council system. And there's no alpha. All tribes are allowed in, and that provides it a different sort of setting from the usual werewolf. One tribe or one or two tribes have control over a particular cairn and have that particular sept being their focus area. This says any werewolves from any tribe could be in this area, and that's interesting.
Hello, folks. Have you ever wished you could have an easy way to find gameplay videos and podcasts, or just media in general that deals with your favorite White Wolf role-playing games? Or have you ever wished you could find a forum to share gameplay that you have recorded, one which wouldn't be drowned out by random posts and discussion, so that your media could get the attention you want? Well, we have the answer for you in a Facebook group we run called White Wolf RPGs Gameplay and Media. The group is specifically ran with the sole intent of it being a one-stop shop for people to view or share media involving the games we all love. We take thorough steps to ensure the page does not become cluttered and is easy to traverse. We are currently over 1,000 members strong, and we are continuing to rapidly grow with new media being shared every day. Stop on by. We hope to see you there.
I'd say the most important of the NPCs that are provided here is Roger Daly. And Roger Daly is the glasswalker that set up this deal with Siegfried. So Siegfried and Roger Daly are the ones that brainstormed this concept, and Roger Daly convinced the Silverfang leader, Abercrom, to go along with this idea. So the two werewolves and the vampire effectively work with one another to set up this covenant between the various, between the werewolves and the vampires. What's interesting to note about that is it's, again, it's provided or it's suggested as something that allows them to focus on things that maybe would harm or hurt one group over the other. There's also the implication, or not just the implication, but the specific thing that this has allowed the werewolves to actually drive out Pentex from Vancouver. So Pentex has no influence in Vancouver because werewolves have been able to push against this. They haven't had to fight vampires like they usually would in most cities, which is interesting. That's kind of an interesting thing that they have that potential there. Where I think this gets really, really interesting for werewolves is where you get to the elements of the Priest of Gaia. Priest of Gaia is a gut tooth. He is a lupus shadow lord. And as a lupus shadow lord, there's certainly an idea that maybe he's underhanded and untrustworthy, but by having him be lupus, he's disconnected slightly from the more human ideas of honor and lying and things like that. So probably there's potentially an expectation that he doesn't have those sorts of shadow lord tendencies going on. But he's presenting himself as being a messenger of Gaia, that Gaia speaks to him, is protecting him, and he is suggesting that the werewolf should go on a total war, which is a term they use in capital letters, total war being against all the humans and the vampires in the area. And he's selling this as his idea. He's selling this as, this is what we should be doing. We should be restarting the Impergium. We should be not making such alliances with leeches. We should be killing them. And he's getting a lot of followers. So you have this covenant set up, and you have the 13 tribes working together, and then you have the side influence from this werewolf that is gaining followers and saying, no, all of this needs to go. So this is a powder keg of a city, ready to explode at any moment. And there's just enough plot hooks throughout this entire book for you to layer it in. And honestly, if I were running a Werewolf Chronicle, this would be a great setup of a story to use. I would also say that you don't have to use some of the elements in this book in Vancouver itself. You could take them out and you could run them anywhere. Guttooth, honestly, is a character that could be used in any region, in any city, so there's no reason not to. So from the werewolf standpoint, this is definitely would be a story that I would run. Talking about the vampire story a little bit, I don't love it. There's not a lot here in the vampire elements that I think are actually very interesting. There is... this is the first book to present the idea of different clans of vampires being from different areas of the world, and you have the Bushi presented in here. And the Bushi are distinctly different from the Kindred of the East, which is presented later on in White Wolf canon. However, I would prefer, if I was going to be running vampire, that my vampire systems were all the same, even if there were different cultural explanations for why vampires exist in a particular area. And though there are lots of problems with the Bushi, I kind of like that they're presented as just another type of, another vampire clan that are effectively the same as the Kindred and Kainites, but they're just slightly different enough that it makes sense from a cultural standpoint, as opposed to being an entirely different type of undead being, which is a problematic element of the Orientalism of some of the early White Wolf books. That's something we could potentially dig into. It's a little bit outside of the focus of this podcast. I will say that there's enough details here on the vampires for you to take some of these characters and maybe use them in other locations, or dig in and use them here in this particular story. But I don't know. They're not my favorite element of this. I might actually take the werewolf elements of this story and focus on them, focus on creating the tension between the 13 different tribes in this sept, on the fact that their cairn is in an urban location, and sure, maybe include the idea that the vampires have some sort of alliance with the werewolves that's keeping them from destroying one another. But I'd focus a lot more on the werewolf politics, because I think that's what's interesting about this story, is the werewolf politics get into subtle human elements that are a little bit different than the usual kill, destroy, and war for Gaia elements that you see in most Werewolf the Apocalypse games, which is fine. That is definitely, there's nothing wrong with that. I enjoy those stories, but I think there's something deep here. There's some deep elements of story that can be explored by talking about what is religion when we can interact directly with spirits, but yet sometimes we can't see these spirits. We don't see the direct influence. We maybe don't notice that this individual is worm-tainted. Wait, what if they're not worm-tainted? What if they truly believe this? And what if they are protected by some spirits? But that doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean necessarily that the way they are going about things is actually going to be good in the long run. In this book, you're presented with a couple of story hooks in a section, but you're also presented with a very linear story, War and Peace. And as a linear story, I don't like it. It doesn't really do much in a way that I would say, use this, run it, it would be really effective. It could give you some hooks to run your own story, but I don't like being provided with linear stories in my World of Darkness games. That's not enough to really, it's not enough to really engage me as a storyteller. It's not enough to make me want to run it. That said, there are some story hooks on page 117, which I think are pretty decent. Again, use them in Vancouver, use them in other locations. The last part of this book, and I'll just mention it really quickly again, is the appendix about Clan Bushi. And Bushi is a word that references Bushido and the traditions of the samurai class within Japan. And the weakness of this particular vampire clan is tied to concepts of honor. And like I said before, there's some concerning Orientalism with that and the way it's presented, but in some ways I like the Bushi more than I liked the Kindred of the East because of those elements. So overall, this is a book that I would say, get it if you're a werewolf storyteller. Take elements from this and use them in other places. Use them here. Use this setting. Use the vampires if you want to, but they're not the strongest element of this story. So that's been our review of Dark Alliance Vancouver. Definitely 6 out of 10 sort of book. This is another episode of Werewolf the Podcast. I've been your host, Josh Heath. Thanks very much. Again, please send us any comments, questions, or concerns about anything that we've discussed, and we're happy to engage with our community about those.